He turned around almost reluctantly. Home. It's late. I don't want to get caught here with the sun coming up. Since the sun wasn't coming up for hours, this struck Clary as a feeble excuse. You know you're welcome to stay and sleep here during the day if you want to avoid your mom. You can sleep in my room.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Why not? I don't understand why you're going. He smiled at her. It was a sad smile with something else underneath.
You know what the worst feeling I can imagine is?
She blinked at him. No.
Not trusting the person I love more than anything else in the world.
She put her hand on his sleeve. He didn't move away, but he didn't respond to her touch either. Do you mean...
Yes, he said, knowing what she was about to ask. I mean you.
But you can trust me.
I used to think I could, he said. But I get the feeling you'd rather pine over someone you can never possibly be with than try being with someone you can.
There was no point pretending. Just give me time, she said. I just need some time to get over it all.
You're not going to tell me I'm wrong, are you?
He said. His eyes looked very wide and dark in the dim porch light.
Not this time.
Not this time. I'm sorry.
Don't be.
He turned away from her and her outstretched hand, heading for the porch steps.
At least it's the truth.
For whatever that's worth. She shoved her hands into her pockets, watching him as he walked away from her until he was swallowed up by the darkness. It turned out that Magnus and Jace weren't leaving after all. Magnus wanted to spend a few more hours at the house to make sure that Maya and Luke were recovering as expected. After a few minutes of awkward conversation with a bored Magnus while Jace, sitting on Luke's piano bench and industriously studying some sheet music, ignored her, Clary decided to go to bed early. But sleep didn't come. She could hear Jace's soft piano playing through the walls, but that wasn't what was keeping her awake. She was thinking of Simon, leaving for a house that no longer felt like home to him, of the despair in Jace's voice as he said, "I want to hate you," and of Magnus not telling Jace the truth. That Alec did not want Jace to know about his relationship because he was still in love with him. She thought of the satisfaction it would have brought Magnus to say the words out loud, to acknowledge what the truth was and the fact that he hadn't said them, had let Alec go on lying and pretending, because that was what Alec wanted, and Magnus cared about Alec enough to give him that. Maybe it was true what the Sealy Queen had said after all. Love made you a liar. Chapter 13. A Host of Rebel Angels. There are three distinct sections to Ravel's Gaspard de la Nuit. Jace had played his way through the first when he got up from the piano, went into the kitchen, picked up Luke's phone, and made a single call. Then he went back to the piano and the Gaspard. He was halfway through the third section when he saw a light sweep across Luke's front lawn. It cut off a moment later, plunging the view from the front window into darkness, but Jace was already on his feet and reaching for his jacket. He closed Luke's front door behind him soundlessly and loped down the front steps two at a time. On the lawn by the footpath was a motorcycle, the engine still rumbling. It had a weirdly organic look to it. Pipes like ropey veins wound up and over the chassis, and the single headlight, now dim, resembled a gleaming eye. In a way, it looked as alive as the boy who was leaning against the cycle, looking at Jace curiously. He was wearing a brown leather jacket, and his dark hair curled down to the collar of it and fell over his narrowed eyes. He was grinning, exposing pointed white teeth. Of course, Jace thought neither the boy nor the motorcycle was really alive. They both ran on demon energies, fed by the night. Raphael, Jace said by way of greeting.
You see, Raphael said, I have brought it as you asked me to.
I see that.
Though I might add, I have been very curious as to why you should want such a thing as a demonic motorcycle. They are not exactly covenant, for one thing, and for another, it is rumored you already have one.
I do have one, Jace admitted, circling the cycle so as to examine it from all angles. But it's on the roof of the Institute, and I can't get to it right now.
Raphael chuckled softly. It seems we're both unwelcome at the Institute.
You bloodsuckers still on the most wanted list? Raphael leaned to the side and spit delicately onto the ground.
"They accuse us of murders," he said angrily. "The death of the were-creature, the fairy, even the warlock. Though I have told them we do not drink warlock blood, it is bitter and can work strange changes in those who consume it."
"You told Maris this?"
"Maris?" Raphael's eyes glittered. "I could not speak with her if I wanted to. All decisions are made through the Inquisitor now. All inquiries and requests routed through her. It is a bad situation, friend. A bad situation."
"You're telling me," said Jace. "And we're not friends. I agreed not to tell the Clave what happened with Simon because I needed your help, not because I like you."
Raphael grinned, his teeth flashing white in the dark.
"You like me." He tilted his head to the side. "It is odd," he reflected. "I would have thought you would seem different now that you are in disgrace with the Clave, no longer their favored son. I thought some of that arrogance might have been beaten out of you, but you are just the same."
"I believe in consistency," Jay said. "Are you going to let me have the bike or not? I've only got a few hours until sunrise."
"I take it that means you're not going to give me a ride home?"
Raphael moved gracefully away from the motorcycle. As he moved, Jace caught the bright glint of the gold chain around his throat.
"Nope." Jace climbed onto the bike. "But you can sleep in the cellar under the house if you're worried about sunrise."
"Hmm." Raphael seemed thoughtful.
He was a few inches shorter than Jace, and though he looked younger physically, his eyes were much older.
"So are we even for Simon now, Shadow Hunter?"
Jace gunned the bike, turning it toward the river.
"We'll never be even, bloodsucker. But at least this is a start."
Jace hadn't ridden a cycle since the weather had changed, and he was caught short by the icy wind that arced off the river, piercing his thin jacket and the denim of his jeans with dozens of ice-tipped needles of cold. Jace shivered, glad that at least he had worn leather gloves to protect his hands. Though the sun had just gone down, the world already seemed leached of color. The river was the color of steel, the sky gray as a dove, the horizon a thick black painted line in the distance. Lights winked and glittered along the spans of the Williamsburg and Manhattan bridges. The air tasted of snow, though winter was months away. The last time he'd flown over the river, Clary had been with him, her arms around him and her small hands bunched in the material of his jacket. He hadn't been cold then. He banked the cycle viciously and felt it lurch sideways. He thought he saw his own shadow flung against the water, tilted crazily to the side. As he righted himself, he saw it. A ship with black metal sides, unmarked and almost lightless. Its prow a narrow blade scything the water ahead. It reminded him of a shark, lean and quick and deadly. He braked and drifted carefully downward, soundless, a leaf caught in a tide. He didn't feel as if he were falling, more as if the ship were lifting itself to meet him, buoyed on a rising current. The wheels of the cycle touched down onto the deck and he glided slowly to a stop. There was no need to cut the engine. He swung his legs off the cycle and its rumble subsided to a growl, then a purr, then silence. When he glanced back at it, it looked a little as if it were glowering at him, like an unhappy dog after being told to stay. He grinned at it.
"I'll be back for you," he said. "I've got to check out this boat first."
There was a lot to check out. He was standing on a wide deck, the water to his left. Everything was painted black. The deck, the metal guardrail that encircled it, even the windows in the long, narrow cabin were blacked out. The boat was bigger than he'd expected it to be, probably the length of a football field, maybe more. It wasn't like any ship he'd ever seen before. Too big to be a yacht, too small to be a naval vessel, and he'd never seen a ship where everything was painted black. Jace wondered where his father had gotten it. Leaving the bike, he started a slow circuit around the deck. The clouds had cleared and the stars shone down, impossibly bright. He could see the city illuminated on both sides of him as if he stood in an empty, narrow-walled passage made of light. His boots echoed hollowly against the deck. He wondered suddenly if Valentine was even here. Jace had rarely been anywhere that seemed so thoroughly deserted. He paused for a moment at the bow of the boat, looking out over the river that sliced between Manhattan and Long Island like a scar.
The water was churned to gray peaks, lashed with silver along their tops, and a strong and steady wind was blowing, the kind of wind that blew only across water. He stretched his arms out and let the wind take his jacket and blow it back like wings, whip his hair across his face, sting his eyes to tears. There had been a lake by the manor house in Idris. His father had taught him to sail on it, taught him the language of wind and water, of buoyancy and air.
"All men should know how to sail," he had said.
It was one of the few times he'd ever spoken like that, saying "all men" and not "all shadow hunters." It was a brief reminder that whatever else Jace might be, he was still part of the human race. Turning away from the bow with his eyes stinging, Jace saw a door set into the wall of the cabin between two blacked-out windows. Crossing the deck quickly, he tried the handle. It was locked. With his stele, he carved a quick set of opening runes into the metal and the door swung open, the hinges shrieking in protest and shedding red flakes of rust. Jace ducked under the low doorway and found himself in a dimly lit metal stairwell. The air smelled of rust and disuse. He took another step forward and the door shut behind him with an echoing metallic slam, plunging him into darkness. He swore, feeling for the witchlight runestone in his pocket. His gloves felt suddenly clunky, his fingers stiff with cold. He was colder inside than he had been out on the deck. The air was like ice. He drew his hand out of his pocket, shivering, and not just from the temperature. The hair along the back of his neck was prickling, his every nerve screaming. Something was wrong. He raised the runestone, and it flared into light, making his eyes water even more. Through the blur, he saw the slender figure of a girl standing in front of him, her hands clasped across her chest, her hair a splash of red color against the black metal all around them. His hand shook, scattering leaping darts of witchlight as if a host of fireflies had risen out of the darkness below. "Clary?" She stared at him, white-faced, her lips trembling. Questions died in his throat. What was she doing here? How had she gotten to the ship? A spasm of terror gripped him, worse than any fear he'd ever felt for himself. Something was wrong with her, with Clary. He took a step forward just as she moved her hands away from her chest and held them out to him. They were sticky with blood. Blood covered the front of her white dress like a scarlet bib. He caught her with one arm as she sagged forward. He nearly dropped the witchlight as her weight fell against him. He could feel the beat of her heart, the brush of her soft hair against his chin, so familiar. The scent of her was different, though. That scent he associated with Clary, a mix of floral soap and clean cotton, was gone. He smelled only blood and metal. Her head tilted back, her eyes rolling up to the whites. The wild beating of her heart was slowing, stopping. "No!" He shook her, hard enough that her head rolled against his arm. "Clary, wake up!" He shook her again, and this time her lashes fluttered. He felt his relief like a sudden cold sweat, and then her eyes were open, but they were no longer green. They were an opaque and glowing white. White and blinding as headlights on a dark road, white as the clamoring noise inside his own mind. "I've seen those eyes before," he thought. And then darkness surged up over him like a wave, bringing silence with it.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Mortal Instruments, Book 2, City of Ashes, by Cassandra Clare. Read by Natalie Moore.
There were holes punched into the darkness,
glimmering dots of light against shadow. Jace closed his eyes, trying to calm his own breathing. There was a coppery taste in his mouth like blood, and he could tell that he was lying on a cold metal surface and that the chill was seeping through his clothes and into his skin. He counted backward from 100 inside his head until his breathing slowed. Then he opened his eyes again. The darkness was still there, but it had resolved itself into familiar night sky punctuated by stars. He was on the deck of the ship, flat on his back in the shadow of the Brooklyn Bridge, which loomed at the ship's bow like a gray mountain of metal and stone. He groaned and lifted himself onto his elbows, then froze as he became aware of another shadow, this one recognizably human, leaning over him.
"That was a nasty knock to the head you got," said the voice that haunted his nightmares. "How do you feel?"
Jace sat up and immediately regretted it as his stomach lurched. If he'd eaten anything in the past 10 hours, he was fairly sure he would have thrown it up. As it was, the sour taste of bile flooded his mouth.
"I feel like hell."
Valentine smiled. He was sitting on a stack of empty flattened boxes, wearing a neat gray suit and tie, as if he were seated behind the elegant mahogany desk at the Wayland Manor House in Idris.
"I have another obvious question for you. How did you find me?"
"I tortured it out of your round demon," said Jace.
"You're the one who taught me where they keep their hearts."
"I threatened it, and it told me. Well, they're not very bright, but it managed to tell me it had come from a ship on the river. I looked up and saw the shadow of your boat on the water. It told me you'd summoned it, too, but I already knew that."
"I see."
Valentine seemed to be hiding a smile.
"Next time you should at least tell me you're coming before you drop by. It would save you a nasty run-in with my guards."
"Guards?" Jace propped himself against the cold metal railing and took in deep breaths of clean, cold air.
"You mean demons, don't you? You use the sword to summon them."
"I don't deny that," Valentine said. "Lucian's beasts shattered my army of Forsaken, and I had neither time nor inclination to create more. Now that I have the mortal sword, I no longer need them. I have others."
Jace thought of Clary, bloody and dying in his arms. He put a hand to his forehead. It was cool where the metal railing had touched it.
"That thing in the stairwell," he said. "It wasn't Clary, was it?"
"Clary?"
Valentine sounded mildly surprised.
"Is that what you saw?" "Why wouldn't it be what I saw?"
Jace struggled to keep his voice flat, nonchalant. He wasn't unfamiliar or uncomfortable with secrets, either his own or other people's, but his feelings for Clary were something he had told himself he could bear only if he did not look at them too closely. But this was Valentine. He looked at everything closely, studying it, analyzing in what way it could be turned to his advantage. In that way, he reminded Jace of the Queen of the Seely Court, cool, menacing, calculating.
"What you encountered in the stairwell," Valentine said, "was Agrimon, the demon of fear. Agrimon takes the form of whatever most terrifies you. When it is done feeding on your terror, it kills you, presuming you are still alive at that point. Most men and women die of fear before that. You are to be congratulated for holding out as long as you did."
"Agrimon?" Jace was astonished. "That's a greater demon. Where did you get a hold of that?"
"I paid a young and hubristic warlock to summon it for me. He thought that if the demon remained inside his pentagram, he could control it. Unfortunately for him, his greatest fear was that a demon he summoned would break the wards of the pentagram and attack him, and that's exactly what happened when Agrimon came through."
"So that's how he died," Jace said.
"How who died?"
"The warlock," Jace said. "His name was Elias. He was 16. But you knew that, didn't you? The ritual of infernal conversion." Valentine laughed.
"You have been busy, haven't you? So you know why I sent those demons to Lucian's house, don't you?"
"You wanted Maya," said Jace, "because she's a werewolf child. You need her blood."
"I sent the Drevac demons to spy out what there was to see at Lucian's and report back to me," Valentine said. "Lucian killed one of them, but when the other reported the presence of a young lycanthrope..."
"You sent the round demons to take her."
Jace felt suddenly very tired.
"Because Luke is fond of her and you wanted to hurt him if you could."
He paused, and then said in a measured tone,
"Which is pretty low,
even for you. For a moment, a spark of anger lit Valentine's eyes. Then he threw his head back and roared.